nao bhunaktu saha viryan karavavahai tejasvinavadhitamastu ma vidvishavahai om shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Page 76.
Navai jano jatu katan chana vrajen mukunda save sevan yavad anga samsritim smaran mukundang griupa guha nam punar vihatum ichena narasa graho jana.
Oh, the person who serves Mukunda will never, under any condition, return to the material world, unlike practitioners of other processes. Remembering the embrace of the Lord's lotus feet, eager for that taste he has experienced, he will not desire to give up those feet again. In the above verse, anyavat means like those practicing karma. The devotee will not attain the world of piety and sin caused by karma, but will accept the world of happiness and distress given by the Lord.
Right. So here, as we're looking at it, we're looking at happiness and distress in terms of piety and impiety, right? Because here, then dealing with ajamil, then the aspect of sin, right? Then we're thinking, what's the problem with sin? Right, sin means then you'll be unhappy, and sin means there's a good chance you may be on the, you know, how you say, the wrong end of the stick, right? So therefore we're worried about that, right? We don't like it because it doesn't give good for us, and we may get something bad from someone else's sin, right? Or yeah, but here. Then we're talking about, it's just when a devotee just looks at his happiness and distress. Right? So in other words, what is piety? Doing things that are pleasing to the Lord. What's impiety? Not pleasing to the Lord. So therefore, happiness and distress is just what makes the Lord happy, what doesn't make the Lord happy. Right? Does that make sense? That's the principle. So it's not looked at by that, because piety and impiety, we're looking at it, what will gain from this, what will benefit from this. But this is not about what will benefit, but what, how Krishna benefits.
Tavad avagami naveti bhavad uta subashubayor gunavi guna gunan vayams Tarhi deha brityam cha gira. Ano yugam anvaham saguna gita paramparaya. Shravana brityo yas yatas tvam apavarga gati manu jahi.
When a person realizes you, he no longer cares about his good and bad fortune arising from past pious and sinful acts, since it is you alone who control his good and bad fortune. Such a realized devotee also disregards what ordinary living entities say about him. Right? So that's an important part. Because whatever you do, people have something to say about you. Right? And if we're basing what people are saying is that's going to be beneficial for me or not beneficial for me. Right? A materialist, how he looks at the world, is not for anybody's benefit except their own. So therefore the devotees don't care what they say. Right, we do what is approved in our parampara, what pleases Guru and Krishna, right, and the Vaishnava. That's what we do. Then if the common person likes that, great. And if he doesn't like that, who cares?
Right? Now, one may say, oh, this is insensitive, this and that. But anybody in the world who's comfortable with themselves, this is exactly what they do. Right? Because no one will like what you do. There actually is no one who will like what you do. Doesn't matter what you're wearing, how you wear it, it's wrong. They would not do that. Why? Because everybody's an individual. But since everyone being an individual, that's fine. But the point is what's the basis for what's right and wrong? If it's not Krishna and his instructions, then it's going to be speculative. Therefore, you can never be right or wrong. That's why in the Vedic system, then you do. No one worries about it. Right? You have your standard way of doing things, and everybody's comfortable. You don't worry. You can have the widest range. Does that make sense? You have the widest range of dressing, the widest range of food, the widest range of anything. Well, in the Western thing, it's very, very narrow, unless it's really, really exact, and then how many people it's exact with. You know? You have one, two, three friends, and that's only on certain points, not on everything. You understand? So one can never, so therefore one never worries about what others are doing. Such a realized devotee also disregards what ordinary living beings say about him. So he's not worried about his past karma, good and bad. He's not worried about what others say. So all he's worried about is what pleases Krishna. So they're in a different category. That's why they're not part of this world. And not being part of the world is quite good. You know? But if we're used to being part of the world, just fitting in, then that's not actually very ideal. Because what we don't notice is fitting in means fitting into the everybody's idea of sense gratification. That's what you're fitting into. I walk down the street, I feel normal, means I fit into the environment of sense gratification. That's what it means. It doesn't mean, oh, I'm an individual, I'm doing what I want. No. That's the fun part. Liberals talk about being the individual, and then when you are an individual, oh, you got to fit in. You know what I'm saying? This is passionate ignorance. Everybody is about their thing. At the same time as, you know, what the standard is, this and that, everything's contradictory. You know? So one could say, yes, the mode of ignorance reconciles all contradictions. But in reality, it's only pure goodness. What's connected to Krishna, that reconciles. Okay. Yes?
Yes, so when someone does worry about what others think, is it a lack of
self-control? Well, it's not that one doesn't know what's presentable and what's not and what's appropriate for the situation. But having addressed that, then you don't worry. You know what I'm saying? So let's say you're in a formal situation, so you wear clothes that are a little bit more formal. You're informal, you wear that. But you don't worry if people like a sari or not. You know what I'm saying? You just can't care. You know what I'm saying? Because otherwise, what does fit in? Right? Full blouse all the way down, or it's a blouse where you take the bottom, you don't button it up and you tie the bottom like that. Does it have long sleeves? Does it have short sleeves? Does it have no sleeves? Are those little puffy little sleeves like that? Do you wear a spaghetti top? Do you wear two spaghetti tops so that, you know, two stick out? Does your bra stick out from the spaghetti top? Or you wear a strapless? You know, so you can go on and on and on. It's unlimited. So then what is fitting in? So it's just whatever you're comfortable wearing and all that. So therefore, that's the point. You like wearing it, you just wear it. You know? It's appropriate for the situation. It's properly worn. You're dealing properly. What do you care? You know, does that make sense? So the people that lead it, you know, it's called fashion forward. They're the ones that wear the stuff that no one else will wear. So technically, devotees will say, oh, we're so archaic. No, we're so far fashion forward that it's going to take them a few hundred years to catch up. Does that make sense? That's it. It's just so far forward they can't even see. They're so far behind the curve they can't even see it. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like we've been wearing, you know, chuddars or like these dupattas and stuff for how long? How long have they been wearing them in India? hundreds and hundreds, thousands of years. Only now shawls and those, you know, neck things are a fashion. Right? You know, it comes in, men and women are wearing, women, it has to change constantly. Men still wear. You know? Does that make sense? You know, high-end stuff, I mean, high-end, when they do the walks and that, the most of them are wearing neck stuff, neck scarves and that. That's stuff we do. Westerners don't do that. They haven't done that for 200 years. Sorry? Yes, I'm saying now it's the cutting fashion. We've been using it for thousands of years. They are only now figuring it out. That's my point. That's what I'm saying. On the runway, in men's fashion, at least half the guys are wearing some neck scarves. Yeah. Women wear them less. They'll wear them, but it's one thing they do. Men always wear them if they're into that kind of thing. Does that make sense? So I'm just saying is that. And women wear them, it's pretty standard. Does that make sense? You know, so that's what I'm saying is that trying to please everybody, you never will. The people who really set fashion couldn't care less if anybody else likes it. And that's why you like it. So that's the point, is he's not caring about his karma, he's not caring what other people think, he only cares what does Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra think. That's all. Because you please Krishna, then things work right. You don't please Krishna, then what's the point? If everybody in the world is happy and Krishna's not, what's the point? And there's no question everybody will be happy, so then basically you lose out. God's not happy, no one's happy. Every day he fills his ears with your glories, which are recited in each age by unbroken succession of Manu's descendants, right? So it doesn't change according to the age. It's not that, oh, that's you know, we sing some Narottam Das Thakur, oh, yeah, that's so, you know, 1980s, you know, devotees used to do that before. You know. And thus you become his ultimate salvation. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:87-40. Those who have not destroyed offenses to the name will continue to experience the undestroyed effects of sin. When by increase of bhakti, by practicing it, the offenses to the name are destroyed, the root of sin will be destroyed and the person will immediately attain the Lord. Right? Because if you're absorbed in the Lord, then nothing bothers you. Right? It's not that it has to be a nice situation or not nice. You're comfortable with everything. So here's that. The undestroyed effects of sin, as long as we haven't gotten rid of the offenses to the name, then those things will be there. So if we're experiencing things, it just means we have to improve our chanting. We think, no, I have to improve the material situation. That you do as a course of duty. But actually, the only way it's going to be benefited is by qualifying your chanting. Does that make sense? Because otherwise you have a nice situation and you're still not happy. Like that. That's going to happen. Right? Once living in one place is too small, you're unhappy. You know, the whole thing, move to a bigger place, you'll be happy. But when you move into the big place after the first, you know, couple of days, then you're just as unhappy in the big place as you were in the small place. Because what we have to remember is when you leave the small place, go to the big place, your mind also goes along. And now that there's more space, the mind can take up more space, and so there's more to run around in your mind. Right? So, yeah? So therefore, it's only by increasing the quality of devotional service, then we can be happy. But it's not because of the place. We're happy just because we are. We're connected to the Lord. Because all these places, they'll never make anybody happy. Yes.
Yeah. On this point that the mind being born from the mode of goodness,
yes,
it should be happy by nature, but somehow it tends to be, you know, always unhappy, at least for some individuals.
Yes.
So is that because he lost connection with Krishna?
That's theirs. That, in other words, if the mind's going to be good in goodness, So like you said, it's from goodness, but how many live the lifestyle of goodness, following everything, doing everything, very clean, very orderly? Right? Not so many. You know, no. It's just like, how you say? Let's say someone's going to come over and visit, right? So what's one of the things one does with the house before they come over?
Clean,
right? So that means we're not living in an environment that is so stable all the time. So one of the things, what's nice about having people over is the clean environment, everything being exact, arranged, and everything like that. Like that. So if we always are like that, then that will make the mind a little bit more stable. But it's actually only in pure goodness that it's actually. Because the material mind is from goodness, but the spiritual mind is from pure goodness.
Yeah.
Right? So, and we being spiritual, we're only really satisfied with the spiritual mind. So that's why it's recommended following the Vedic system, living a lifestyle in goodness. So Brahminical culture means you're in goodness, so you're situated in Brahman. You're trying to situate in pure goodness, but at least minimum is goodness. Right? You know, it's like goodness to pure goodness, you know. You know, like that. Yeah, it's just like, let's say, at base camp is, you know, just, you know, a few hours below the top of the mountain, it's easy. Then you can go from there up to the top, down, you know, like that. But if base camp is down at the bottom of the mountain, then it's a problem. So when we emulate the Western lifestyle, then it's passion and ignorance. And there's a good chance for most devotees it'll be ignorance. Very few in the Western environment are actually in passion, where they have that drive to actually improve things on a consistent basis. You know, there's always going to be a flash of passion, you know, that you get into something and then it'll go back down. So as people are always that drive of passion, it's a very strong thing. So the intensity, it becomes disturbing. But if it's in goodness, then one can have that intensity and it's very pleasant. Because you're doing because it's supposed to be done, not that you're trying to gain something. So then the mind will be peaceful. That's why the Vedas recommend the lifestyle and the mode of goodness. And so that will actually make happy. Everyone's looking to be happy, but the actual thing that will make you happy is not understood and is therefore rejected. And so then because of the speculative idea doesn't work, then there'll be further speculation how to make it work more and more. You know, so it'll just go on and on and on until, yeah. Because the modern lifestyle, if it did work, why would people come to Krishna consciousness? They wouldn't be arta-artarthi jivyasa. But it's not working, that's why they're in those positions.
It's just painful to see the devotees, they struggle, but they can't understand what is the nature of the struggle, because
yes.
On one side we are very spiritual, but on another side mind is always unhappy.
Yeah. Yes, because it's a matter of the culture. Devotees have accepted the philosophy, but not the culture. But the point is the philosophy will, you know, satisfy the mind, the heart like this, but the culture is all the social interactions, the economics, the sense gratification, you know. So in other words, the philosophy will take care of moksha and the bhakti, but the culture will take for, you know, dharma, artha, kama and bhakti. You know, so that's the thing, is it's not being, what's actually, that's the mode of ignorance, is we don't see that what actually will solve our problem is not going to work. You know, we just think it has to be something. Oh, I can't do that. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, just for an example, are there expat Americans living around the world? Right? Two or three, or thousands, or tens of thousands. Right? And they're living in different countries. And being expats means they like it there better than being in America. So that means they talk the local language, they eat the local food, they, you know, in consideration of how the locals do, probably their friends and everything are all locals. Right? So that means, as a basic culture, then Americans could go anywhere and adjust with anything because they do it. Yeah, because they have no culture, so going anywhere else is a step up. Yeah,
no,
yeah. So that's the bottom line. Like that. That's it. You said it. I didn't. Thank you for bringing the point to us. So this idea is, oh, we're Americans, we're Westerners, we can't do that. That's totally bogus. Because if you go back somehow or another, you know, depending on what it is, their parents, grandparents, great grandparents, they were living that culture exclusively. They didn't probably even speak English. They came to America, they fit in, following that culture, and then with a few generations, now, you know, here we are that we're, you know, don't know these other things. So that's the whole thing. It's just bodily consciousness that we think, oh, I can't do that, or...
Now,
yes.
The people who are the more in goodness in the world, not just in goodness, are the smarter than me.
Smart, as you could say, would be the most, because they're actually following the Vedic culture in that. You'll find, let's say, people out in the country, they're in an environment of goodness, though they themselves are in ignorance. You know what I'm saying? Because living in the forest is the mode of goodness for humans.
Yes.
Right? Living in the cities, that's passion and ignorance. Right, so they'll be in an environment of goodness, so they can appreciate things of goodness and all that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So the idea is to give Krishna consciousness, then no matter where anybody is, they can be situated in goodness. So if you're in the city, you're in goodness, you know, so you improve the quality of the lifestyle, right, and all this and that, and then the people in the village, then their, you know, their environment's goodness, but their consciousness and that's not, so you improve that. So then it works for everybody. That's the thing. Krishna consciousness works for everybody everywhere. Mm-hmm. Everything else works in the local area. Like what they do in Florida works in Florida. It won't work up in, you know, Virginia or New York. You know, you don't do that stuff. You know what I'm saying? L.A. works in L.A. It doesn't work in San Francisco. You know, so that's the whole thing, is what happens in one place doesn't work in another place. It just doesn't. You know? So therefore, if we're having some bad effects, that's because of the Krishna consciousness hasn't developed so much. Right? So that's actually what would get rid of the problem. Improve Krishna consciousness, improve our association. And as far as the material environment goes, you follow the Vedic culture, then you have the best environment that you can get. But even if you have a better environment, as has been pointed out, it's not that if our consciousness hasn't changed, we can't take advantage of the better environment. Right? So on one side, by the performance of our duties, right? In other words, for the varna side, then we're improving the quality of the environment by following our duties. So that creates the nicest environment that we could be in. And from the ashram side, we're improving our Krishna consciousness. You know, like that. And then we'll be satisfied in whatever situation we're in. Right? So that's what happens. We're not satisfied. So that's the programs. Krishna consciousness is the main thing, and the varnashram and the cultural things, that's the secondary. One deals with actually our consciousness, and the other deals with the environment we're in. Now, the Vedic system, that is Krishna's system, so you're working with his material energy, how he likes. So if he's pleased, that's why the environment's better. And because you're getting that environment by pleasing him, that will create an underlying point. But you're still only dealing on the platform of Brahman and Paramatma. Right? But we're improving our quality of our Krishna consciousness That's then Bhagavan. And then the varnashram social things are being done to please Krishna, so then the whole thing becomes Bhagavan. Right? Then that's how we'll be happy. So that's why, you know, that's for the interim. Right? And then at some point it gets where you don't even care about the external environment anymore. Right? You know, so that's vanaprastha means you care less, and that means less than that. So that just comes with time.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Comes
you have to be aware of it, then it will come. Because even if you're not aware, if it does come, you won't know it's there. Like if you don't know what food is, if someone brings food, you won't know what it is. It's just some decoration on the table. You know. So if you know what it is, then and you value it, then when it comes, then you'll take advantage. You know what I'm saying? Just like, you know, the example of the hardwiring of midlife crisis. Now, for many, because they want to be happy and enjoy and dynamic and on top of the pile and, you know, the whole, you know, list of things. When that happens, then it throws them off their game. Right? But in actuality, it's just the natural point is I've been doing something for so long and I haven't gotten the results I thought I would get, one starts to doubt. So then the natural thing is you just go into vanaprastha. It's like, why work so hard? Because it's not. Instead of making the new plan of, oh, this is a new way I'll enjoy. But the problem, if that took you 25, 30 years to figure out, now your new plan, how long is that going to take for you to figure out? Right? So if you start that at 50, you know, then you're 75, 80 before you figure it out. You know? And so then that's the problem. Now what are you going to do? Right? You know. So that's the Vedic sense is work it out now while you still have some energy. Now put it into that more detached and not worrying about it so much. Then it makes it much easier. Then when you get 75, 80, life is much easier. Because, you know, what do you need? Just chant and some prasad and you're done. Right? But if at that time you figure out, then you'll need plan three. You know, and really hard to do when, you know, I call it. Yeah. Hard to be dynamic and active with a ventilator. Yeah. So. Yes. Is still again because the fans who can't hear.
Okay.
But what does that mean? He's older and vanaprastha and she's young. Means he's 50, she's 40. That's not young and full of desire. You know what I'm saying? What do you mean by age? Okay. But the point is did he marry her? Is it a partnership? So then they have to do that together. You know what I'm saying? If we get to the age where it's supposed to be like this and she's still trying to, you know, be like she's 20 or, you know, do the share profile, then there's a problem there. But still, it has to be considered until something can be worked out. You know, the son's there, maybe he can take care. You know, like that. But the idea is that they should work on this together. Because it's a matter of what do you call it? You know, it means they should be talking and discussing. And no? So in other words, she has this, that has to be dealt with. But at the same time, she also has to realize this: one is getting older and there is philosophies there for a reason and the culture is there for a reason, because even you get, you know, more stuff, when do you wear it? You know, it's just like this. Let's say there's 500 saris. When do you actually wear them? Huh? Oh, you open a shop. Yeah, that's another thing. And then the profit from selling those, you buy a new 500. Now this is Now this is smart. You know, why get stuck with the same old 500? When do you wear them? I'm talking about reality. When do you wear them? Strange, you're moving in the wrong circles. No, one Mataji, they didn't come to India 1 year because they had to spend all their money rebuilding their wardrobe because the 500 saris collapsed all the shelves, so they had to actually redo the house and all that so that everything would fit properly. 500 is pretty standard. Yeah, where have you been? You know, Marwaris, like that, the business community, they all have like 500. And if you're not in that community, then 250 is pretty ordinary.
So if you're up to 50, means you're on the cusp
already? Yes, already, see? Already there, you've been working. Finally, you made it to Vanaprastha, you know, that, you know, moving up from Lechayavana, and then finally we get to Vanaprastha. Yeah. So it's good. You know, and then if you're talking about really averaging 100, yeah, but you just take, you have all that together. The point is when can you wear the things? You know what I'm saying? Let's say there's that, you have a special sari. How often can you wear the special sari?
Once,
yeah. And then after many, many years, you can wear it again. But it has to be a different group and a different occasion. You understand? So that kind of passion at some point has to go. You know what I'm saying? So even you take it down from 500 down to 50, there's going to be those saris that you can't wear, right? You can wear it here, because if you do, then someone will say, oh, you don't have anything else? Every wedding you wear the same fancy sari, then people will start to, you understand? That's the whole point. You have to get to the point he doesn't care. Then how many do you need? Then you only need like, you know, 10. You understand? But you have to get to that point. You know what I'm saying? So you don't need more jewelry, more this, that, more vacations to, you know, Bali or wherever it is. Most go to, right?
Thailand.
Bangkok, Thailand. Yeah, Thailand or some funny island there that you can never get anything to eat. But, you know, beach is great, but nothing to eat. You know, wouldn't it be better to have something to eat and no beach? Or, you know?
Stay home.
Yeah. You know, just but that's what you do. Is you just have the local guys paint, you know, some big thing hanging on the walls. You just have these, you know, beach scene, you know, like that. This year, where do you want to go? Okay, let's go to, you know, what's that place? Hawaii. Then you just put those up. You know, the big waves and the guys on the things like that. Yeah, surfers. Then the next year you put up something else.
Ibiza,
like that. You understand? So the idea is that one has to reduce anyway because it's just too much trouble. So one has to make a balance between he's trying to consider her situation because she still has desire, but she should also be considering his because he's already past the point of desire. So you have to make a balance of that. Does that make sense? Because otherwise, it's all going to go anyway. So therefore, if there is desire, be very exact. You know what I'm saying? You don't want those boots in five different colors. Just pick the boots in one color that works. You understand? So the effect you want to look good or you want to go to effect, but be very exact. You know, the idea of, the whole wide range. No, drop that. Whatever is actually the desire is narrowed down to just those things. Then you'll be spending less money, less energy, less that, and it's something you can do. And then having done that, that'll then start to go down. But if it's just always options, options, then at what point, how much can you do? You have to reduce what is options.
You need to know what you want.
Yes, but then you have to know what you want. You have to know what is your reason for doing things. And then knowing that, then you focus just exactly on what it, out of that, what's the best. In other words, what would you like to do? Okay, sit down, write it all down, all the things you need, all the one, you know, you're saying there's so much desires there, write it all down. Having written it all down, that you feel, okay, we got everything, right? You know, down to whatever it is, you know, hula hooping and bungee jumping at the same time. Whatever it is, get it all on the list, right? You know, and then having done that, now prioritize. Huh? Then that's easy enough. But since when is vanaprastha not include the wife? That's one way to do it, if the wife wants to prefers to be at home with the kids. But otherwise, vanaprastha generally means husband and wife. This idea is that, no, it just means, no, that's not the point. If that's the only thing, then that's easy enough to do. So that just has to be, you know, so that's the point. It's those things are done together. Right? So it's about companionship. Then you have to, then if that's the point, then what's the reason he's thinking vanaprastha means without the wife? Does that make sense? So then one has to figure that out. And then see if that can be adjusted, right? Because companionship is easy, you understand? But if there's too much emotional, all this and that, that's the difficult part. So one has to figure out how to deal with that, you know? So by being with, then one has to be more peaceful, and then it'll work. Better to be with and be peaceful than to be not peaceful and not with. You understand? Does that make sense? So then, like that, one moves on. Right? Because it's another ashram. In other words, grihastha means it's an endeavor. So vanaprastha means it's an endeavor. Does that make sense? Yeah. But then, in order to increase the bhakti, those devotees may even take one, two, or three lifetimes to attain the Lord. The material happiness, the quote-unquote material happiness, seen in those devotees arises from the practice of bhakti. It is not karma. Right? In other words, so the material facilities devotees have is not coming from karma. It's actually coming from devotional service. Right? But if the consciousness hasn't been purified, then we'll still get anxieties from those material benefits that have come by bhakti. Right? Dharmasya yapavargasya nartor tayo pakalpate nartasya dharmaikantasya kamo labhaya hi smrita. The material results are not suitable as the goal for the person dedicated to higher spiritual goals. The desire of the person dedicated to the higher path is not for attainment of material assets. Right? So he may be getting material assets, and there may be an attachment to it, but that's not the reason he performs bhakti. He performs bhakti to please Krishna. The quote-unquote suffering seen in those devotees is given by the Lord, who is skillful at increasing the devotion of his devotee, and who is like a doctor who makes a person fast and gives bitter medicine for increasing the patient's appetite. Right? So increase the appetite so you increase the health. But then there's fasting, there's bitter medicine, there's all kinds of stuff that you really are not into. Right? Like that. Yasyaham anu grinami harishye tad dhanam sanahi.
tato dhanam tyajantyasya svajana dukha dukhitam. If I especially favor someone, I gradually deprive him of his wealth. Then the relatives and friends of such a poverty-stricken man abandon him. In this way, he suffers one distress after another. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.88.8. So you can see, very auspicious, because you get 108, you know, by all three of them. So three auspiciousness there. Right? Because then here it is, relatives are interested because you have money. You have no money, they're not interested. So we're thinking, oh, this is very bad. It's very good. Now you don't have relatives harassing you anymore. So Krishna's being very kind. But one has to be able to, one has to be comfortable with that. That's the whole thing. So, if by giving facility, one will be Krishna conscious, then Krishna gives. If by taking it away, you'll be Krishna conscious, he'll take it away. That's what he says. He's expert, like a skilled doctor, who knows exactly what to do for the patient to increase the devotion. So just like the doctor's increasing appetite, then Krishna's increasing devotion. So that's why the devotee, if it's being done for Krishna, he's not worried about the environment he's in. So if he's not worried about the environment he's in, he's not worried what others will say or this or that. He's just worried about what Krishna wants. But one performs duties, so if one has facility, one has that, one takes care of that. But having facility and being happy don't really have a connection to each other. We make it that it has something to do with it, but it has nothing to do with each other. In the spiritual world, the living entities there, they serve Krishna. That's why they're happy. Krishna's happy, they're happy. It has nothing to do with the environment they're in. The environment is just to support their service to Krishna. So we have, if Krishna gives facilities, that's to support the devotional service, not us being happy. Because we already tried being happy with the facilities, and here we are. Didn't work out. So we have to learn to be happy with the relationships and the interactions based on Krishna consciousness. So we're doing these things to please Krishna. Yes.
Well, sometimes it's not clear when in our life the regular karma stops working and then Krishna karma applies. Something that's a moment of initiation, or when is it actually happening?
That basically means when Shraddha is developed. Before that means all sin is removed, but when you take up that, then you can say that's going to be there. Krishna's taking care. It's just that when you take initiation, now Krishna takes it that you're serious about the process. Because then bhajana kriya, that's your focus.
Yeah.
But before that, it still says shraddha to prema. You know, if it was only initiation to prema, then it would be like that.
Right.
You know, Madhyamadhikari to Prema, or Uttamadhikari to Prema, like, you know what I'm saying? So, point is that Shraddha. Before that, that Agyata Sukriti, the sins are all gone from the chanting and service.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not that one is, you know, necessarily dynamically addressing Krishna consciousness and moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is that right? That's the point. Devotional service is independent. Chanting Hare Krishna works even if we're not initiated. Right? See, other things, they don't work if you're not initiated. Deity worship in the temple, Gayatri mantras, you know, all these different kinds of things. Unless you're initiated, they don't work. You know what I'm saying? You can chant Gayatri mantra all day, and if you haven't gotten it in initiation, it won't work. But Hare Krishna is independent. So therefore, it's already working. It's already having effect. So then, when you take initiation, then you can say, now he's serious. You know, it's just like, let's say, the person is in university. Right? They're going to their classes, and, you know, they're partying, hanging out with friends, and all that. But are they in school? Are they getting some benefit from the education? Yeah, a little bit. Now, let's say one day they decide, okay, I want to study, I want to do good, get good grades and all that. Are they in the university? Are they still learning something? Right? So what's changed? Right? They're focused. So that's what initiation is. Initiation means you get serious. That's all. It's not that it's something else.
Because accepting the order of the spiritual master of your life and soul, that's the active ingredient. It's not that the yajna in that, like I remember before, it was that, you know, to put the bananas in the fire, so then all your karma is burnt in that, so don't touch the bananas, you know, who knows what will happen to you. And, you know, last guy that touched the bananas like that, you don't want to know what happened. Yeah, but no, the bananas are an offering to the Lord. It's like prasad, you know, you offer, it's like, okay, you offer prasad to the Lord means it's removing karma and that, but it's not that now all the karma's in the food, you know, especially the sweets, right? You know what I'm saying? So that's not what's happening.
Yeah, I remember one of these patients at Takamara, they asked him what did you do with the bananas. He ate them to Saddam, they eat them and people.
Yeah.
So some ate, but some wouldn't.
Yeah. Because it was very popular in Northern Europe and the East Bloc and all that, that, you know, the karma's in there, and, you know, if you eat that, then, you know, you turn into an ogre or something right on the spot. You grow horns and teeth. And the only place they'll give you to stay in the temple is under the stairs, and, you know. It's just for sure. But it was very popular. It sounds good, you know, that, the point is no, it's taking the instructions of the spiritual master is life and soul. That's the dynamic principle. That's it. Among the 10 offenses, the very strong effects of interpreting the name, thinking its glories are exaggeration, and equating it with pious acts, are obstacles to being a Vaishnava. Among the other offenses, two are very strong, offending the devotees and committing sin on the strength of chanting. These two are particularly described in a frightening way.
Right, so things in between, they're all bad, but it's just pointing out one will keep one from actually having the proper Vaishnava attitude. Right, so we saw amongst the karmis, if they are thinking they're equal to karmakanda activities because they're approaching bhakti with the point of karmakanda, they will get the effect of karmakanda, right? But they only get the effect of how much they've done, right? You know, you give 10 rupees, they'll get 10 rupees worth of goods, right? Like that. But if they interpret the name, then they won't get anything, right? So these will keep one from actually even taking up Vaishnav understanding. So to make an interpretation on this, this is not good. Then for devotees, offending the devotees and then sinning on the strength of the name, that then is what you have to watch out for. Right? Like that. So then, that will be a great obstacle. The other ones then are a problem. But they're less of a problem. But it doesn't mean they're not a problem. It just means these ones are really a problem. In other words, they're all a problem, and some are more of a problem. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Yata khyatim yatam katam u sahate tad vigarham. How can the name tolerate criticism of those who spread the name? Padma Purana. Because right? That's the point, is the mercy of the name is coming down through the preachers, and if we criticize them, why will the name be interesting? Namno balarasya hi papabudhir dhirna vidyate tasya yamer hi shudhi papabudhirna. For a person who commits sin on the strength of chanting, there is no purification by the servants of Yama. So that means even they don't have something to purify you. Right? Does that make sense? It means in the material world you do all kinds of nonsense, you can get purified. It may be a bit extreme, as we saw in the hellish planets, but for committing sin on the strength of the holy name, then, you know, even if they toss you off the mountain, you know, onto the rocks for millions of years, it still won't counteract. So therefore, only devotional service, you know, having the right attitude, that will counteract. So in other words, the only solution to all problems is bhakti. Right? But of these two, the worst is the devotees, the first one. The second one is the most abominable, but it doesn't mean it's the worst. Because it's abominable
what you have in devotional service, that will remain. You just may not progress any further. You may get stopped. But the first one will actually destroy the credits that you have. So that's why that's considered the worst. There's no other means of destroying the effects of these two offenses than to continually chant the name while suffering appropriately for the offense. So, we see I'm suffering because of lack of bhakti, I'm okay with that, and I continue chanting. That will then clear all these, right? Because why do they come? Due to impurities. By constant chanting, those will go away. Does that make sense? So, they're there, the only solution is continued chanting. So that's the problem. We say, oh, by chanting I'm committing these offenses, but the only solution is continue chanting. It's not that there's something else. Okay. The effects of the other offenses will be destroyed simply by continually chanting without the suffering. Right. Right. So does that make sense? So all the others will go away. The suffering will come from these two. The other ones will just go away. Some people make the following proposition. Those offenders of the name who are without karma and jnana and who practice bhakti with hearing and chanting but have not taken initiation because they have not surrendered to the feet of a guru are still called Vaishnavas. The word Vaishnava is defined as the person who takes Vishnu as his object of worship, according to Panini Sutras 4.224 and 4.395. Thus, Vaishnavas are those who have made Vishnu the object of worship by accepting initiation, but also those who make Vishnu the object of worship simply by worship, since there's no other word to describe the two types of people. So the latter type of persons should also not fall to hell. This, however, is not correct because one cannot attain the Lord easily without guru. So in other words, they're practicing, so here this doesn't mean devotees who are practicing and aren't initiated yet. This means those who follow the Vedic rules of worshipping Vishnu, but don't have a guru and you know, getting initiated isn't really part of their program. Does that make sense? So the smartas and that, they follow all nicely. They do very proper worship. But, so this is talking about them, because otherwise you count, why aren't they Vaishnavas? Yes. But the point is they're
they were chanting.
Yeah, chanting, but they're following our process and they have our goals. So most likely they would go to the heavenly planets.
So can we say they consider Srila Prabhupada as a founder of Vaishnava, can become the guru in some?
That's there, but they haven't made a commitment specifically to see that somebody's seeing that you're following.
No, and
then it'll be less. It'll be according to whatever's their commitment. So it'll be more or less on the individual. So maybe they won't go to such heavenly planets. And when they come back, it won't be such an aristocratic family.
And if such people, they leave their body in the ground, what would be the benefit of that? Extra benefit?
Definitely, definitely.
Higher?
Well, it depends. If they remember Krishna, then they'll be there. But then they have to actually commit to following Guru and the Vaishnavas. Because the point is just because you're in the spiritual world, doesn't you're still an individual. And you still have your consciousness. And so then, if you didn't take Guru seriously here, you won't take Guru seriously there either. You're the same person.
But what would be the purification part? Like, leaving the body in the ground, that's already purified, isn't it?
Yes, then you're liberated. So liberated simply means on the Brahma Bhuta platform. So they'll either take, you know, that way a very good, you know, birth, you know, in the heavenly regions, and then here, they'll take better because of that. Or they go, if they remember Krishna, they'll go back to Godhead, but then they still have to accept a guru. They still have to follow, they still have to continue on. You know what I'm saying? The process, you know, it means we start the process here. You know, it's just like, let's say somebody decides they want to get into skiing. So that means they do absolutely nothing. And then, you know, just one day they rock up at the ski resort and then everything's going to happen. Or is it beforehand they've already studied like that, figured out things, they're already looking up, trying to inform themselves, trying to get their gear, trying to get everything, so then when they walk, come there, then they're a little prepared. Otherwise, when you get there, then yeah, then you still have to get yourself somebody and have to get yourself some skis and go down into the town, buy some stuff. And so it's the same thing. It's just that the process already starts here, so by the time you get there, it works very smoothly. Like that. So, yes?
Can we be bothered in the spiritual world by people who have gone there but they are not so serious?
Can we be bothered? I heard yesterday about some people who they say they will not go back to Godhead if that other person is there. They're very determined. As long as he's there, I'm not going there. But they could go to some other realm, right? They could, you know, if they went to Golok, then they could go to Vaikuntha or something.
Means they want to be somewhere else.
But I mean, it's just... Yeah, so, but... I mean, they could always put that in, you know, that they want to be in another part of the pastime, so that person's not there, so...
I think at that level, they would not develop as much.
No, probably not. Probably not. Probably not going to get very spiritual at all. Why, what do you mean by getting bothered? What do you mean by service? And what do you mean by disturb? But the point is there you don't get distracted from Krishna. So therefore, the so-called distractions just create variety within the pastime. In other words, variety remains. But just like variety here is the cause of happiness or distress, there it's not. It's all just part of service. Right? The cowherd boys are playing with Krishna, okay? And the sun's going, you know, it's twilight. So they have to get Krishna back and they have to go home. So is that a disturbance to their service? Right? Or Mother Jashoda in the morning, very happily there, Krishna's been fed, he's like this. Now the cowherd boys want to take him out into Vrindavan. Is that a disturbance? You understand? You know? Or the cowherd boys are stealing Madhu Mangal's lunch and tossing it around while he's running and trying to catch it. Is that a disturbance? You understand? But the point is if Madhu Mangal didn't have that attitude, then how do they have that fun and please Krishna? So that's one of his services he does for Krishna, is it's always about eating. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I don't know, nowadays it probably is not necessarily a popular thing, but, you know, do you have any friend or friends that you like to eat with and do things crazy with when it comes to eating? Huh? Right? So therefore, that's what Madhu Mangal does. You know, he talks up the eating and this and make jokes about it, you know, and makes it into something very interesting. So therefore, because it's about eating, then they can harass him by stealing his lunch. You understand? So that's all service to Krishna, so it's not a disturbance. Here it is. Somebody steals your lunch, it's a problem. You know, so like you're sitting there waiting and they put down the plate and, you know, just as you're channeling at that, someone else goes, oh, excuse me. Huh? That would be a problem. No? Yeah, so the point is there is no problem. There's variety, but it doesn't give problems. So that's the thing. Personality here gives problem. In the spiritual world, it doesn't. It enhances. Variety there enhances. Here it gives us problem. Everything gives us problem. There they have unlimited wealth. It doesn't give them problem. Here it gives us problem. Either we want it, or when we have it, we want to keep it. But we don't have it, you know, we sleep peacefully at night. We have it, we can't sleep peacefully at night. So what's the point?
Does that make sense?
Yes.
If a devotee did accept a proper spiritual master, but then the spiritual master leaves ISKCON, and the disciple is very hurt and loses all his trust in the principle of guru.
But here, okay. How long have we been in the material world? You know? Some time, right? Because it's like, you know, unless last lifetime you were a Brahma, we've been here a while, right? Okay. Now, in the material world, do things happen that are disappointing? Is it a regular occurrence, or is... Okay. And still we have not lost our faith in the material world. So why is it one incident and that's it, spiritual life, we're done with that, you know? That's not intelligent. You understand? Point is what's the alternative? Right? You're in one's in material life. It's driving you crazy. It has for the last unlimited lifetimes you've been here. Now finally we figure out that maybe bhakti has something to do with it. We take up bhakti. One thing goes wrong in bhakti and that's it. You know, we pack up, go home. Where are you going to go? Because the material world can't, it's still the same material world.
No, yeah, I'm not saying.
No, what I'm just saying is just look at it from that. Where's the alternative? There is no alternative. So, therefore, what does it have to do with spiritual life? Right? Why is it spiritual life is the problem? So, therefore, then we can't be, you know, lose faith in spiritual life. Spiritual life remains the same. Right?
But one needs guru, so one needs this faith to be able to accept guru again. And it's like,
no, but faith is in Krishna. And then the devotees who are connected to Krishna. So there's the generic faith that remains. Maybe specific faith in a specific person, that goes away. Otherwise, it's like little kids, right? You give them something to eat and it didn't work out quite right, you know, the carrots were a little hard or too much salt or something, and then that's it. They can never eat carrots, you know. So here you have this 25-year-old, you know, and they're picking the carrots out of their salad because they can't stand carrots. That's it. We're dealing with a 3-year-old mentality here. Faith is in spiritual life. You didn't know this spiritual master before, and you came to Krishna consciousness with faith in the mission of Lord Chaitanya and the process of devotional service, then you deal with one person, and so that's a very important person. If something goes wrong there, why spiritual life and that doesn't continue? Does that make sense?
Yes, sure. And it does continue.
No, don't give me that. Because if it's hard to explain, that means you don't know what it is. Otherwise, you could explain it. There's a feeling there, and you haven't analyzed the feeling enough so you can explain it. You're just happy with that feeling sitting there and cultivating it, nourishing it. Because unless it's somebody very recently, gurus will left a long time ago. You know, so it's like after 20 years, we should be moving on. You know what I'm saying? You know, even the guy who's would die if the girl died and she died and or went away, then after a few years he's looking around for what's available.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So there's the principle of representing this, the representing the acharya, representing Krishna. So the point is in all these years of Krishna consciousness, no other senior Vaishnavas impressed you with their understanding of Krishna consciousness or practice of Krishna consciousness. This one person is it. So, therefore, then, these ones go, you still have everybody else. You have a big family, you know, if the father dies, uncles are there, aunts are there, the people are there. We make it into this nuclear family that if somebody goes, that's it, and we're finished, and we're back to zero, and we have nothing. And these are ours, just like we were talking about. The bananas carry all the karma. These are our Western concepts of spiritual life. The family of devotional service still continues. Does that make sense? So now it's a matter of, as we had faith in all these other devotees, and then one person became prominent from among them, we took initiation. If that person's not there, those other people are still there. But we tend to make it, oh, when I take initiation, then I cut off relationship with these others. That's called, quote, unquote, chaste. Then you should make your point. Because understand is that this topic is not a new topic. I've been dealing with it since 86. Right? So then what exactly of this topic are you talking about?
About losing trust.
But losing trust in what? Okay. Okay. And okay, just let's say, just take for example this spiritual master who has created a loss of trust in, you know, said individual. Okay? How many disciples did they have in total that were actually initiated that are in the books? Very many. And at the time when they were still functioning, how many of them were still active in Krishna consciousness? Half? Okay. So now, why hasn't the spiritual master lost all trust in the concept of teacher and student relationships? Because all these students are all rat bags and just decide to go back to the material energy because they think that Maya is so much more attractive than the, you know, the grand and illustrious and eternal instructions that they're representing. Remember, it's a two-way street. So they haven't given up, so why should the disciples give up? You know, like we're saying, you get on the bus, you're trying to go to Calcutta, and let's say the bus breaks down halfway. So that's it. I'm not taking buses anymore. I have no trust in buses. How can I have faith? I trusted this bus would get me to Calcutta. The smart person gets on another bus. Emotionally, there's a lacking, but as far as tattva goes, any of the Sini Vaishnavas can take you back to Godhead. The point is to get there. So if the bus you got on didn't work, then, you know, you take another bus. And if you're in Italy, you would take about 10 buses. But you get there. You understand? The point is it works. Whose instructions are we following? Where did the instructions come from? Cracker Jack's box, or from? Yes, and how do they come to us? And what's the specific point of the guru? What kind of gurus are there? What kind of gurus are there? Because you're talking about a Diksha guru. Yeah, but the point is, what's the important part of the Diksha Guru? Yeah, okay, that connection, okay, but you're connected, okay, now what? I have a friend who's 91st in line to the throne in England. He's connected. He's actual bona fide English aristocracy. But, you know, you'd have to kill off 90 other people before he'd be king. So connection is, that's important. But now that you're connected, now what? Now you go on vacation? Right? What are you supposed to do now? Now that you're initiated, now you have the connection, now what? Party's over? But how do you make progress? How do you make progress?
By following the instructions.
That's it. So the instructions are what's the, that's the living part of initiation. The other's a ritual just to make sure that you understood you have a connection. You understand? So the instructions. So instructions carry on. Where are those instructions from? The spiritual master is telling you, where did he get them from? From Krishna, directly. And any significance in this parampara here? From Srila Prabhupada. Heard that name? Okay. Never heard him called Founder Acharya? Okay, Founder Acharya means that person in the Sampradaya who he, it's his instructions that everybody follows. His are the instructions that take you back to Godhead. The guru, the contemporary guru that you take initiation from, he gives relevant instruction. It means he makes Prabhupada's instructions relevant for you. It's not his own instructions. So therefore, if he goes, you still have the instructions that Prabhupada gave. Now you just have to have other people to can carry on the structure. The connection's been made. You're connected. But siksha is what's missing. So therefore, now you take shelter of those siksha gurus. And the thing works. It's so much easier if one person's the diksha and siksha. But if not, then diksha is one, siksha is another, siksha is a few. The process still works. Because otherwise, who are we? What are we so special about us that we're the one that has the right to be so disappointed and I've been let down? And who are we? What's our specialness that we're so great that we can sit there and, you know, lick our wounds for the last 20, 30 years?
Yeah, I know. One devotee even told me that if this happens to you in this lifetime, it means last lifetime you have to let down your spiritual master.
And who cares how it happened? The point is, what are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
You know, the reason that you dropped a bottle of mustard on your floor is because, you know, you've dropped someone else's bottle of mustard on the floor, and they're not. Does that matter? It's a matter of, well, what are you going to do to clean it up? You know, and then what are you going to put on your sandwich? You know what I'm saying? So it's about the present. What are you going to do right now? Not living in the past and, oh, this happened and, oh, that happened and, oh, like this. And you can make the, what do you call it, Lonely Hearts Club, you know, here, and everyone sit around and cry and lament and, oh, this, the whole thing. Or if you want to go back to Godhead, then you carry on with the instructions. You know? We're talking about the position. Now, the personal relationship, those kind of things, the emotions, of course, that's not there. But the process can still work. You know, it's like you're in the hospital. Maybe you like specifically one doctor, but they're not there. They're out on vacation. You have to, you know, someone else. But you'll get better. It's not ideal, but yes, it works.
So it's all right to accept another spiritual master, even if one has no faith in what?
No faith in what? You're taking it that the spiritual master is the one and only, and it's all there. What happened to the founder Acharya? Yes, sir. You talk to a present-day member of the Sri Sampradaya. What, and you ask him philosophy. Whose philosophy are they talking? Ramanuja. They don't say my spiritual. They'll say Ramanuja Acharya. It's his philosophy. Like what we're discussing here is what Prabhupada says, what the Acharyas say. Now if you ask him, how do you know this? Then he'll say, my spiritual master. The Madhvas the same. Nimbarkas, Shris, even the Shankaras, they talk. And there's a founder Acharya, everyone just talks what the founder says. That's the instructions. Now you have to have someone to see that you're following it nicely. That's what the spiritual master is for. So in other words, one should have knowledge of the situation. It shouldn't be just sentimental. Sentiment's good, but it shouldn't be just sentimental. The intelligence should be working also. Does that make sense? Yeah. So the point is like that. And you'll find relationships. You can have relationships with other devotees also. It's like there's Krishna, then there's the devotee. So the neophyte just sees Krishna, doesn't see the devotees. So that includes here. My spiritual master is it, and everybody else, you know, it doesn't really matter. Okay? Does that make sense? So that's the neophyte's view. Madhyamas don't view like that. It's sad, it's you like that association, like that, but you'll carry on. You know, it's about developing love for Krishna. Not us being the center of attention, it's all about us. Because otherwise here the guru did this, or the management did this, or this devotee did this. There's a whole long list. It's not just the guru, don't worry. It's not that they're perfectly fine with everything else, everything's fabulous, and then it's only the guru's problem. It'll be a generic problem. Just the guru's easy to focus on. You understand? So that's why I was saying, don't take it so seriously. It means going back to Godhead, having Guru surrender, that's serious. But that one's disappointed in this way, that's just we make it that we're disappointed in this way. In other words, if we weren't a devotee, we would be disappointed in the same way. Oh, my girlfriend left me, or my boss did this and fired me, or, you know, it just goes on and on and on. It's the same thing. In other words, our conditioning is, I have to feel like that. Because that gives importance and value to our life. You understand? So we have to see is, we're the soul. We're trying to go back to Godhead. These other things, we have to address the conditioning. That's why the culture is there. That's why the process is the way it is. Because it's a personal process. But the point is, the parampara, the potency of the parampara, is working despite that guru being there or not. You know what I'm saying? The plug burns out, you bring the current from somewhere else. You plug into another plug. It still works. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So this addresses the point of having faith, trust, and all that. It doesn't address the loss in personal relationships. That's not even the discussion now. We're just discussing the faith and like that, trust. A little child. You know, a little child, they're not devious, right? No? So they trust others. And when someone's devious, they don't trust anybody. So these situations then make us aware of actually our own mentality. You know, whatever it is, yeah. Does that make sense? So it's not just the guru, otherwise it wouldn't bother you as much. It'd simply be an emotional loss of relationship. But if there's doubt of faith in the system and everything like that, that's a fault in ourselves, not in the guru. That makes sense? Yeah. So in other words, there is only Krishna. There is only his process. That's what's being brought out here by the Acharya. There isn't anything else. So the only alternative is illusion. So why get involved in illusion? It hasn't worked for us since time immemorial. Why let Maya trick us again? Because otherwise it's just Maya's trick. Something goes wrong with Guru. Oh, okay, now drop the devotional process. It's just Maya's trick. Yeah. I've seen zones, the guru falls down, no one goes away. They all continue on, it goes on perfectly. I've seen another zone, guru goes away, in 3 weeks there's nobody left. I mean nobody. Oh, excuse me, the deities are left. And that's not an exaggeration. So then if we're looking for an excuse, Maya will give it to us. And if we're not, we go on. Point is, do you want Krishna or do you want to feel bad? We already feel bad. We're in the material world, so. Does that make sense? Because the point is this the name. Spiritual master, the Vaishnava scriptures are representing the name. So we have to have that faith in the name. Because if we're looking simply for emotional support, that one will get in Krishna consciousness. But that's not the reason we come to Krishna consciousness for emotional support. That's artha. But we have to move beyond that. We have to get at least up to jigyasa. I mean, to jnana. If we come because emotional, you know, disturbance, and then we get it in this society, then that's not what we're looking for. Because it's not that religion produces material facility. That's what most people think religion is. I practice religion, everything materially should go nice for me. But actually, religion is to please Krishna. It's just a form. It addresses all the emotional, sensual, intellectual platforms. It engages them, but it's supposed to be engaging in Krishna's service. Does that make sense? So that'll work or that won't work? Won't work. Okay.
That's true.
Huh?
That's true.
No. Okay. Okay, so we're sorry if we couldn't give you more emotional support in this topic, but seeing that we're dealing on an intellectual, analytical kind of points here, that is the topic, actually, so that's why the, how you say, discussions run in that way. Okay, therefore it should be explained that there is no other way to attaining the Lord than by becoming a devotee who has surrendered to the feet of a guru, who will be attained in another birth by the power of worship. But it is seen that Ajamiya, without surrendering to guru, easily attained the Lord. This can be explained as follows. Right, so that's the doubt now. Right, because we're saying the smartas, they're worshipping the Lord, they haven't taken shelter of guru. So, not having then they actually aren't Vaishnavas. And we see Ajamiel, he hasn't surrendered to Guru, but he attained the Lord. Well, the smartas are not. So it's explained as follows. Those who, like cows or asses, make their senses pursue sense object cannot know the Lord. Bhakti or Guru, even in their dreams. Oh, know the Lord, Bhakti or Guru, even in their dreams. But as in the case of Ajamiel, they can be delivered even without Guru, by chanting the name in Nama Bas without offense. Though it has been definitely ascertained that the Lord should be worshipped, that worship is the means of attaining Him. That the Guru is the person who teaches about worship, and that those who are devotees attain the Lord, it is also said. Right? So therefore Nama Bas is delivering. Right? But that doesn't mean he hasn't developed love for Krishna. So he's been liberated, freed from sins, but he hasn't developed love for Krishna. That's the whole process that you're trying to get to. Being freed from sin, being freed from the material entanglement, that's one thing. But developing love for Krishna, that's a whole other thing. Okay. Yes?
Can we say that the free from sin and material entanglement can be without the guru, but to develop love of God, we need him?
Yes. I mean, in one sense, because by chanting, anyone who's chanted, they're free from all sin. But the point is that's not the point. Being freed from sin is still here. Brahma, he's the firstborn. You know, if we come in from the spiritual world and born as Brahma, where's the sin? But we're still in the material world. Original sin, okay, is there. But the point is that because the polluted consciousness is there. But he doesn't have any sin as such, and he's still in the material plane. So therefore, on the that one's trying to develop that love for Krishna, that's the whole point. That one gains by the association of the devotees. Right? So then one takes from... Does that make sense? So therefore, about worshiping the Lord, learning how to worship the Lord, that's the important element. Because we chant, we're free from sin. But then it puts us in contact with those who will bring it up. So by that, then we see is by chanting, that brought him in contact with the Vishnu Dutas, who are devotees and associates of the Lord. That will then bring him further in being focused in Krishna consciousness.
And what about hearing the name from the Parampara system?
That's how it'll work.
Otherwise,
then they don't see the importance. That's what you're saying. The smartas, they don't see the importance because they haven't actually touched. They're chanting the form of the name, but the actual potency is not there. Because right? They don't see the name and the Lord is non-different, so he doesn't come to them. But if they're sincere, then they'll come in contact with the bona fide devotees.
So you can say that those, for example, yogi students, they chant the holy name without getting it from the proper source. It doesn't have the true potency.
No, so spiritual benefit they won't get, but they're chanting the name and all that. They'll be freed from sin. They'll be, you know, all these different things. So they'll get so much nice benefit. Their material life will go better. Otherwise, why is it popular? Right? Nothing lasts, so why is this lasting? Okay. But now if they get it from Chitpa, then you'll get, you know, the spiritual benefit. So that's the point. The Lord is he's the one that's special. The name is special. Okay. So seeing everything in connection with him, then that's what works nice. Something like that. Okay. No diksham nacha sat kriyam nacha purascharyam manag ikshate mantro yam rasana sprig eva falati Shri Krishna nama namat atmakaha. The chanting of the holy name does not depend on initiation, pious activities, or the purascharya regulative principles generally observed before initiation. The holy name does not wait for any of these activities. It is self-sufficient, padyavali. So the name itself will start to make you advanced. But the point is advancing, then it's a matter of are you serious about the advancement? Otherwise, one will advance anyway. That's the thing. These other processes, you have to be materially qualified, then they'll work. Right? You want to follow the smarta path, you have to be following the brahminical principles. You're not, they will not work. But you're chanting the holy name, devotees are worshiping the deities, doing things, they don't worry about it. You know, how many devotees do you know that they're doing the puja, they got to go to the bathroom, so they go to the bathroom and they of course, because in third grade they taught them to wash their hands after going to the bathroom, and then they'll come back to the puja, but they didn't wash their feet. Right? And it's going on and they're advancing. Why? Because the holy name's there. Because if it depended upon them washing their feet, no one would get any benefit practically. Right? So that's the thing, is that unless you're materially qualified, these processes won't work. So it's by bhakti only that we're getting benefit from these processes. We're thinking we're independent. No, it's the name's independent. It's working. Okay, so therefore my lifestyle is fine. But actually it's not. My lifestyle is not fine. But despite my lifestyle, the holy name works. So the glory goes to the holy name, not to the non-Vedic, you know, cultures and attachments that we have. Those are the obstacles. But despite that, you know, it's like the holy name is dragging us and our attachments along with it. You know? That's the whole thing. The holy name is the glorious one here. Does that make sense? So that's why Ajamil is getting benefit even though he hasn't taken initiation, isn't practicing. But he's just getting that point up to liberation. Bhakti will come by the positive process. Does that make sense? Yes. Then it's even better. Why? But why are they washing their feet? They heard from scriptures. Okay, that's good. And because scriptures are connected to Krishna, the breathing of Krishna. But, okay, so that's good. That's pious. So we're engaging piety in Krishna's service rather than uncleanliness in Krishna's service. Oh dear Krishna, please accept this uncleanliness. Yeah, okay. You understand? So now, but what's the next step? Why do the scriptures mention wash your feet after going to the bathroom? Because Krishna likes it that way. Krishna does like that. That's why we do it. Krishna washes his hands and feet after eating and after going to the bath, all these things. After he gets up in the morning, all these things. Like Krishna gets up and has his bath. That's why we get up and have a bath. If Krishna didn't get up and have a bath, you know, then why would he be making us have a bath? Unless he's, you know, a jealous God who really wants to make us suffer, right? Because we're here in the material world and we're rat bags, so you got to take a bath. You know, but in the spiritual world, we don't take baths, you know. Hey. You understand? So that's the next day. We do it because it pleases Krishna. But at least minimum we do it because that's the rules and all that, and that's proper. You know, or less than that, you don't wash your feet and it works out bad for you. Because, you know, then uncleanliness, then the, you know, impure consciousness, and, you know, I say, nulla. Kali entered his body through his heel, which he hadn't washed. So he washed only, you know, how sometimes people just like to stick their toes in the water. So you have to wash the whole foot. You have to get the heel wet also. So he didn't. And so Kali Raj entered through his heel. You know, so, you know, then these, okay, then I'll wash my feet. Don't want Kali Raj coming around. You know, because Nala, he was the most beautiful person in the universe, other than Vishnu. Right? Like that. So of those in the material world, the material bodies, he was the most beautiful. His wife was the most beautiful female. That means he was actually better looking than her. Right? And so then he became like a dwarf and a hunchback and this whole thing. So really not good for your profile. You know? So you want to wash your feet. Okay? Better than not doing it at all. But what I'm saying is that's why the scriptures have these, so at least at some point you follow it. But you're actually supposed to be following it just because it pleases Krishna. Guru said it pleases Krishna. Then if somebody wants to know, we can give all kinds of explanations. But that's not why we're doing it. Rag means we do it because we want to, because it pleases somebody. Vaidhi means we do it because we're supposed to. Right? And we can see the benefits for ourselves from following. But rag means we see the benefit for the other person, not for ourselves. That's the advanced stage. Not another external activities that's rag. No, rag is a mood, not the activities. Yes, if they have proper association. If not, they won't know. And then but the point is, because they don't know and they're so absorbed in Krishna, it won't matter. You know what I'm saying? But it has to be, it doesn't matter because of just so absorbed in Krishna. You know, like that one lady who, you know, she was brushing her teeth and she was cooking sweet rice for Madan Gopal and then and Madan Mohan, and then she's brushing her teeth and it started to burn. So he took the neem twig, because the end is a little bit, you know, big like that, yeah, and used it to stir the pot like that, you know, and then after that went back to brushing her teeth, you know. Like that. And so Sanatana Goswami saw that and goes, we got a problem here. Houston, we have a problem. Right? And so then, you know, he was worried about that. Then Madan Gopal came in a dream to the Brahmin and said, give me to him. Simply because of the devotion. That lady had fine devotion. So that's why he was comfortable. Or Jagannath the Sabaras. You know, it's not that they're, you know, the most clean people on the planet. Right? Does that make sense? You know, so the devotion is the main, but you can't be conscious of, if you're conscious of your uncleanliness and say it's fine, then you have to do. But if you're not conscious, then like little children, they're not conscious of something, no one minds. As soon as they're conscious, then they have to follow. You know, like that, you know, so it's like that. Does that make sense? Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.